Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are making last-minute preparations for tonight's first general election presidential debate at Hofstra University. That left their running mates to hoof it on the campaign trail, and both vice presidential nominees were in battleground states today. Tim Kaine was in Lakeland, Florida.
It's a high-stakes night, but I tell you, Hillary is going to do very well because she's going to lay out the vision. This positive vision for our country, and she's going to talk about plans. The thing about 90 minutes is, well, you can't hide. Now, Donald Trump likes to say, you know, I'm going to build this wall, but then I'm not taking any questions about it. Okay, well, you got 90 minutes, and there's just a moderator or two of you on stage. You can run, but you can't hide.
Mike Pence was at a rally in Milford, New Hampshire.
You know, when those two candidates take the stage for the first time in the same place, no more media filters, no more parsing of words. The American people are going to be able to hear from two candidates, and they're going to hear about two futures for this country.
More than 100 million Americans are expected to watch what the New York Times calls, quote, among the most highly anticipated presidential debates in American history. Now, over the past several days, you've probably heard a lot about debate history. JFK Nixon, Reagan Mondale, Benson Quayle. I'll even throw Admiral Stockdale's unfortunate moment in there. Anthony Brooks, WBUR senior political reporter, says there's another presidential debate that's instructive to consider, and it happened right here in Boston. That's Bush-Gore in 2000. And Anthony joins us now. Good to see you, Anthony.
Hey, Meghna.
All right, well, first sum up what you're going to be watching for with Clinton and Trump tonight.
Boy, it's almost hard to say because in this unusual election year defined in so many ways by Donald Trump's unorthodox campaign, it's really hard to know what exactly to expect except maybe the unexpected. But, you know, I think the word that I've been hearing a lot that I like to describe this is asymmetrical. You know, on the one hand, Donald Trump's big challenge is to convince people that he's ready to be president. A large majority of voters don't think he's qualified to do the job. So his big challenge is to look presidential, stay on scripts, not stray off the reservation like he did during the primary when he got away with any number of personal attacks against his Republican opponents, controversial comments, racist comments. So in a way, he sort of has to defy expectations and be less Trump-like.
Less Trump-like.
That's
okay.
That's the way I would describe it. Yeah. Clinton, on the other hand, has just the opposite challenge. She's got the experience, the policy chops, but she has to avoid getting bogged down in those long, bloodless sort of policy descriptions. She knows she needs to show a little bit more of who she really is. And of course, her big challenge is making this case that the country needs what is essentially a third term of President Obama. It's a tough case to make in an atmosphere when so many people are asking for change. So big challenges for both of them.
Big challenges. It's interesting because it's a story of differing expectations. And that brings us to the presidential debate that took place here in Boston at UMass Boston almost 16 years ago to the day,
right,
between then Vice President Al Gore and then Texas Governor George W. Bush. And you covered that debate for NPR. You were there. You've noticed some parallels. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so there were some parallels. So Al Gore, like Clinton, had a slight lead in the polls in a race that was seen as very close. Gore, like Clinton, had a long resume, congressman, senator, vice president. He was considered very well prepared for the job, and he was known as a policy wonk and a tough and sharp debater. George W. Bush, on the other hand, he wasn't Donald Trump, but he was regarded as a bit of a lightweight when it came to policy detail. And there was a lot of anticipation that he wouldn't do as well against Gore. So what happened? Let's listen to a clip from Gore and Bush talking about Medicare.
My plan also says it's going to require a new approach in Washington, D.C. It's going to require somebody who can work across the partisan divide.
If I could respond to that, Jim, under my plan, I will put Medicare in an ironclad lockbox and prevent the money from being used for anything other than Medicare.
So there's a bit of a debate. And Gore spent, as you know, Meghna, a lot of that evening interrupting and talking about that lockbox. And most importantly, rolling his eyes a lot, sighing, conveying a real sense of frustration, even disdain for Bush.
It's all coming back to me now, Anthony, actually. And so what did you and other reporters think who were there after the debate? I mean, who in your sense won that night?
Well, see, this is what's so interesting, because I remember going on the air right afterwards for NPR, and I wasn't alone in this. And a lot of us sort of thought, although we didn't say Gore won, because that wasn't really our job, but there was a sense in the press corps that point for point, Gore kind of carried the evening. Bush did seem a little bit light on, on policy specifics. But the story that quickly became the dominant theme was his sighing, his contemptuous body language. And on the other side, Bush wasn't expected to do well, but he held his own. He didn't make any gaffes. And as the story about Gore sighing and interrupting took hold, it became the narrative, and it even inspired a Saturday Night Live skit. So we should listen to a little of that. Here's Daryl Hammond playing Al Gore.
Governor Bush, both you and the vice president have offered plans to provide prescription drugs for the elderly. What makes your plan superior?
Jim, I'd like to interrupt here and answer that question as if it were my turn to speak.
I mean, that was just days after the debate, Magna, and that became the story. And the Gore people knew it. I mean, I remember talking to one of his senior advisors after that debate, and he told me they knew this was a problem. They had even warned him, don't sigh, don't roll your eyes, it won't help you. But it really hurt him, and despite the fact that he was clearly knowledgeable on the issues, it wasn't enough.
Right. You know, and it's so interesting how persistent these narratives are that emerge from the debates, because both candidates were parodied in that SNL skit pretty intensely. I mean, Will Ferrell, I remember him portraying George W. Bush's squinting and kind of a super dim bulb, and here's how they ended the skit.
We are almost out of time, so I will instead ask each candidate to sum up in a single word the best argument for his candidacy. Governor Bush?
Strategery.
Vice President Gore?
Lockbox.
There's that word strategy, again, both of them. I mean, it's funny to think now, but to get us back to tonight, I mean, the fact that that debate in 2000 was so easily parodied makes me wonder, Anthony, what do you think the lessons are for Clinton and Trump? And, you know, given the media narratives that do get spun out of the debates.
Well, for Clinton, I think the lesson is she can't confuse being the smartest politician on the stage with winning the debate. I mean, I spoke recently to Paul Begala, who's a big Clinton supporter. He was the architect of Bill Clinton's first presidential campaign. And he said Hillary Clinton's challenge is that she's not a natural candidate. She thinks laying out policy and presenting policy solutions should carry the day. It's not an outlandish thought, you know, when you think about it. But unfortunately, in this political culture, it doesn't always work. So she has to find a way to deliver more than that and not get bogged down in these 10-point plans. For Trump, I think the lesson is don't rock the boat. It may seem unfair, but I think the bar is much lower for him. If he can go in there with low expectations, like Bush, and basically look like he belongs on the stage with Clinton, you know, he might emerge. He might be able to quell the doubts of some who think he's not qualified to be president.
Interesting. So both of them should actually, it sounds like you're saying, not quite be themselves. Interesting take on what we should think of for tonight's debate. Now, you're going to be at Keene State College in New Hampshire, a battleground state, as we mentioned at the top of the segment. What are you expecting to see?
So we're taking the pulse, essentially, of younger voters tonight because they're an important voice. They could have a lot to say about the outcome in November. And we're doing it in a state, as you mentioned, that's a swing state. Hillary Clinton very much needs that Obama coalition to support her, and that includes younger voters. Obama won 2/3 of young voters in 2009, 60% in 2012. But recent polls suggest that Clinton is well shy of those numbers. And this is significant because it speaks to the issue of voter turnout. Mm-hmm. In so many ways, this should be Clinton's election to win. She's got the support of women, African-Americans, Latinos, immigrants, and younger voters. But if they don't come out in large numbers, that could hand the election to Donald Trump. So we'll be up in New Hampshire tonight taking a snapshot of one college community's younger voters.
Well, that's WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. He will be covering reaction at Keene State College in New Hampshire, reaction to tonight's debate, which will air live on WBUR. You can tune in or stream online tonight starting at 9 o'clock. Anthony, thank you so much as always.
Always a pleasure, Megna.
We'll be back. I'm Megna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.